Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. It was a year and a half ago, at the beginning of the great COVID pandemic, that I suggested in a number of programs, in four separate articles, all of which you can read and download, they're still very timely, on GaryNall.com, that whether you were vaccinated in the future or not, you had to get your body in shape. And to do that, you should be on a healthy plant-based diet, lots of juices fresh made, lots of supplements, vitamin C, D, coenzyme Q10, magnesium, selenium, zinc, and some herbs like astragalus and podiarco, also olive leaf extract. That was because they were in the scientific literature on PubMed with hundreds of studies on their antiviral properties. Today, just today, a study released, published in the American Journal of Medicine, major journal, a study done at Rutgers University Medical School and the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine says the following, that the COVID-19 vaccine should be shored up with a plant-based diet. Quote, from the study, a solid vaccination program is life-saving, essential, and insufficient, end quote, begins commentary, shoring up vaccine efficacy, which appears today, the author suggesting a healthy plant-based diet to help patients improve their health and decrease vulnerability to COVID-19. That is terrific. In fact, they said here that those who, in six countries, revealed that those following a largely plant-based diet had a 73% lower odds of developing moderate to severe COVID-19 compared to those who followed other diets. By the way, that's without vaccination there. That's just a healthy diet, and we've been saying that all along. Isn't it interesting how many people went in just the opposite direction? When the lockdowns came, fast foods, pizzas, outside deliveries, and no exercising from an awful lot of people. So they actually increase their risk of getting sick. There's a simple reality we all have to understand. In time, most of Americans will end up being infected with COVID or its variants. How healthy you are at the moment when you're infected and how vigorous you are in really supersizing your immune protocols will determine whether or not you get sick, for how long, are hospitalized, or could die. So the consequences of making these choices are profound. In the last 10 days, two people who are friends of mine and did not pay attention to their diets or supplements both contracted COVID. Both nearly died. When I finally got the call and got them onto a protocol, very quickly, very rapidly, they recovered and now have one just got tested today, the other one 2 days ago, and they're not active with any virus in their body. Now, they both have antibodies, but I said even having antibodies in and of itself does not confer 100% protection. It is between 1,200 and 1,600% more protective than the vaccine, because you're getting the entire virus challenge, not just the spike protein. And this is in, as Richard Gale said yesterday in his report, over a dozen scientific studies prove this, and yet you do not hear this anywhere because it goes against the official narrative. But in any case, from the time that you're infected, it will probably take you around 2 to 3 months to superbuild your immune system. So then with the natural antibodies and a super strong immune system and healthy, no comorbidities, you should have no problems in the future. Mind you, we're all exposed. Remember I mentioned on several occasions that at the Tri-State Healing Center, there was a stigma that AIDS was contagious. And I said, that's nonsense. It's not contagious. So I wore no gloves, no mask, no gown, and I would sit there and hold the hands of people who had full-blown AIDS. And that went on for 15 years. 1,200 patients, not a single person got worse. They all got better. Within a year to a year and a half, you wouldn't know that a thing was wrong with these people because they had a super immune system. But 18 of them went on to completely go beyond that in their protocol, and they reversed their HIV status completely. I was exposed to everything. So why didn't I get sick? Because my immune system is always strong. All the time. I don't go through a stage where, I'm going to pig out, I'm on an airplane, I'm going to eat this food. No. And that's not a literal translation when you say food. I don't know what it is. As if someone is going to starve to death in the hour and a half flight. So your immune system is everything, and that's what this study is saying. So again, it's validation, what many of you have already been doing. Good for you. And it's an encouragement to those who haven't gotten around to it, thinking they didn't want to inconvenience themselves from their habits. So we said it, quote, from the studies, quote, renewed emphasis on vegetables, fruits, whole grains, and legumes, and plant-based diets. Quote, this recommendation aligns with the June 2021 American Medical Association policy urging government leaders to encourage individuals with underlying health conditions associated with COVID morbidity, mortality to see their doctors to institute or resume treatments for those underlying conditions. Well, when was the last time your doctor, when giving you a shot, and we're going to get to that in a moment, brand new news, we'll be breaking it today. But I'm going to finish with health first because we've got a packed program. I got a very important commentary today. 1 hour of exercise a week can prevent depression. University of New South Wales in Australia, published in the American Journal of Psychiatry. This is a landmark study led by an institute that revealed that regular exercise of any intensity can prevent future depression, and just 1 hour can help. I don't recommend an hour. I think that's way too little. But they took a look at the 33,908 Norwegian adults who had their levels of exercise and symptoms of depression and anxiety monitored for 11 years. So it's a really good study. So do your exercise. It's important. Also, green tea is associated with lower risk of upper respiratory tract infection. This is from the University of Shizuoka in Japan, published in the European Journal of Nutrition. Now, this is a meta-analysis, meaning they looked at many different studies to see what common characteristics they found. And they found that in the tea, you have chemicals I've mentioned many times called catechins, C-A-T-E-C-H-I-N-S. And these, I actually pronounce it catechins, they go against the upper respiratory tract infections, so they give you healthier lungs. And the catechins are flavanols that occur in tea leaves, including the EGCG, which has strong antiviral effects. That's why taking 1,000 milligrams a day in divided doses, maybe 200 five times a day, of the green tea can stop a lot of viruses. So they looked at 6 randomized controlled trials, and that's what they found. They said gargling or consuming tea or tea catechins against the risk of viral upper respiratory tract infections, including influenza and the common cold, in 3,838 subjects. And it made a difference. So get your green tea. You could have a 21% lower risk of influenza and acute upper respiratory tract infections versus the placebo group. Also, from Edith Cowan University, which is a big university in Australia, cancer breakthrough, exercise may stop the disease in its tracks. You heard me correctly. So forget bed rest. I try to get people up out of bed as much as possible to exercise, especially cancer patients. But researchers at Edith Cowan, that's C-O-W-A-N, had shown exercise may be a key weapon in cancer patients' battle against the disease. Why? Exercise causes muscles to secrete proteins called mycokines, M-Y-O-K-I-N-E-S, into our blood. And researchers from the University's Exercise Medicine Research Institute have learned that these mycokines can suppress tumor growth and even help actively fight cancerous cells. A clinical trial saw obese prostate cancer patients undergo regular exercise training for 12 weeks, giving blood samples before and after the exercise program. They then took the samples and applied them directly onto living prostate cancer cells, and said the results helped explain why cancer progresses more slowly in patients who exercise. The quote, the patient's levels of anti-cancer mycokines increased in 3 months. When we look into their pre-exercise blood and their post-exercise blood and place it over living prostate cancer cells, we saw a significant suppression of the growth of those cells from the post-training blood. It's quite substantial, indicating chronic exercise creates a cancer-suppressive environment in the body, end quote. How about that? Okay, so exercise. And also from Cambridge University and Exeter Universities in the United Kingdom, they looked at 70,000 women who had identified more than 40 regions of the human genome that are involved in governing at what age a woman goes through the menopause. The study led by scientists at Cambridge and Exeter found that 2/3 of those regions contain genes that act to keep DNA healthy by repairing the small damage that can accumulate with age. The study also found that the first genetic evidence of a link between the timing of menopause and the breast cancer corroborated previous conclusions from observational evidence. This was published in Nature Genetics. So you have reproductive cells or eggs in a woman's ovaries, known as oocytes, and these repair damaged DNA more efficiently in a way that allows them to survive longer. And this results in a later age at menopause, which marks the end of a woman's reproductive lifetime. Now, it doesn't stop a woman from creating estrogen, as many people thought. You have other organs in the body that will create estrogen, but not from the ovaries in the same amount as before. And so this results in you being able to delay substantially, even as much as a decade or more. So keep your DNA healthy by doing the things that we talk about all the time, and therefore postpone that. Also from the University of Würzburg in Germany, pycnogenol joint health benefits eliminated in unique trial. Pycnogenol, P-Y-C-N-O-G-E-N-O-L. And in a controlled study, they took a look at pycnogenol, and it wasn't even a high amount. It was 200 milligrams a day, or no treatment, over 3 weeks before surgery. And they looked at the serum, blood cells and synovial fluid samples. They analyzed them all through chromatography. And then they found that those who took pycnogenol had much healthier joints. So you want healthier joints? Get your pycnogenol. That's it on healthy nutrition. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, I want to play a clip. Now, this clip is going to lead me into a commentary. After I saw this, one of the people in this audience sent this over to someone in my office. They sent it to me, and late last night I watched this, and therefore my response to this is coming. Now, this is going to be a clip from Tucker Carlson. I've only played one or two clips my whole lifetime from Tucker, and that was when he had someone on like Glenn Greenwald or Erickson to talk about issues that we found important, and they weren't available at that time to come on this show. On that issue, he was correct. On a lot of other issues, I take issue with Tucker Carlson. But listen to what he has to say, because we have verified this. This is real. This is happening. And this is opening a door to what I said would be a lot worse than COVID. Remember that? I'd heard this was happening, but this has been planned for a long time. We'll be back in a moment, and you're here for yourself.
Political debates are the highlight of the political year, like boxing matches. Everyone would watch them. It doesn't happen anymore. The ratings for the last presidential debates were terrible, and there's a reason for that. They're boring. Everything is scripted. You know what they're going to say before they say it. But if you keep watching the lower tier, the debates lower on the fight card. Sometimes you see something interesting. It happens invariably by accident, but it reveals a lot about the country and the people who are trying to lead it. That just happened last month in Virginia during a governor's debate. Terry McAuliffe was the governor of Virginia. He gravely damaged the state. He's the career Clinton operative, who you may remember from his many brushes with apparent indictment. The Washington Post is always telling you he was about to get indicted. He never was. Instead, he ran Virginia and he ran it into the ground, and now he wants to hurt it even more, so he wants to be reelected. And at the debate last month, Terry McAuliffe announced, just kind of welled up within him, and he told us that parents no longer have a say in their own children's education, the one that they pay for. Instead, Terry McAuliffe informed the state of Virginia, the government is in charge of your child, period.
I don't think parents should be telling schools what they should teach. Let's, you know, I get really tired of everybody running down teachers. I love our teachers. And what they have done through COVID, these are real heroes that deserve our respect.
Well, he's a hack, a liar, and a demagogue. But ignore the second part of the sentence. I don't think parents have any right telling teachers what to teach. Really? So parents don't control their own kids. Do you have a right to tell the pediatrician what kind of medical treatment your kids should get? No. This is the new rule. The government makes all key decisions about your children. And that's not just true in the state of Virginia. It is now orthodoxy throughout the entire Democratic Party. And as of yesterday, this idea, unprecedented in the history of America, has the full backing of the Biden administration, in other words, of the entire federal government. And if you disagree with that, if you're one of those troglodytes who thinks you should have some say in what your children are taught in the schools that you pay for, you should know the Biden administration now views you as a domestic terrorist, and they are fully willing to use armed agents of the state to compel you to shut up. Joe Biden's Justice Department has made that very, very clear. Attorney General Merrick Garland, remember the moderate, soft-spoken one who turned out to be not moderate at all, but a wild-eyed, radical, crazy person? He's now the Attorney General. He issued a memorandum yesterday calling on the FBI to crack down on parents who complain about their school board. Now, keep in mind, at this exact moment that Garland wrote that, we learned that murders in the United States since the advent of Black Lives Matter have gone up 30%. So that's thousands more dead people. This is the Attorney General, our chief law enforcement officer. He did not issue a memo about that. He issued instead a memo about people who are committing wrongthink. Garland directed, quote, federal, state, tribal, territorial, and local law enforcement leaders to discuss strategies for addressing this disturbing trend. This disturbing trend being parents complaining. In the coming days, Garland wrote, the department will announce a series of measures designed to address the rise in criminal conduct directed towards school personnel. Criminal conduct? What does that consist of? Bombings? Assaults? No. Complaining. It is now criminal to disagree with your kid's school. What have we learned from this? Well, among other things, we've learned the Biden administration no longer believes in the most basic precepts of liberal democracy. Among them, your freedom of speech should never be abridged. The government must convince you, not compel you, almost always. And you, and not the government, is in charge of your children. Merrick Garland did not give birth to your kids. They're yours, not his. But they don't acknowledge that anymore. So they're happy to use armed agents of the state to enforce their ideology. And they have to, because that ideology is deeply unpopular with most Americans. Now, why did the DOJ issue this letter? Well, because they'd received a complaint from the National School Boards Association, huge donors, of course, to the Democratic Party. And that complaint cited citizens who were upset over the teachings of, quote, critical race theory and of masking of children, which is medically unnecessary. So the group wrote to the Biden administration and said that some of the actions against school boards, quote, could be the equivalent to a form of domestic terrorism and hate crimes. Oh, so school administrators are now a protected group. If you disagree with them, you're committing a hate crime, not voicing an opinion, which is constitutionally protected. No, it's an act of violence to disagree with them. Let's get specific. According to the National School Boards Association, it's things like this. Quote, earlier this month, a student in Tennessee was mocked during a board meeting for advocating masks in schools after testifying that his grandmother, who was an educator, died because of COVID-19. Now, the association went on to say that the feds should use, quote, the Patriot Act, created after 9/11, to the regret of most thinking people, and that postal inspectors should probe the, quote, cyberbullying school board members claim they have faced. So where does this leave us? Really simple. Mocking someone who calls for medically unnecessary mask mandates is now domestic terrorism and a chief concern of the FBI. What you're not allowed to do going forward, because it's a hate crime, is point out that children and teens actually aren't dying from COVID. They're dying from a lot of things, but not from COVID. Take a look at this chart. We're going to put it on the screen, and it tells you everything. It tells you that a lot of kids are dying of a lot of...
That's part of it. It goes on from there. But understand what you're really hearing. You're hearing now the next stage of censorship. There's an effort to stop all of the individuals, doctors and scientists from around the world, including multiple Nobel Prize winners, Stanford, Harvard, Oxford University, top people, from speaking the truth against the lie, the official lies of Anthony Fauci and COVID. And the science is overwhelming. We're finding huge amounts of science that simply deconstruct every one of their arguments. Hence, after I watched that segment, it's about 12 minutes long. We only played about 3.5 minutes. I have a response. This is entitled Conspiracy Theorizing or Responsible Critical Thinking. I believe that if a parent reads a curriculum and sees books that once were there, like To Kill a Mockingbird, that are now banned, they should have every opportunity at a school board meeting in their time allotted to bring a challenge as to why we have book, in effect, book banning, no different than book burnings. You're taking something that is a part of what a student should have for critical thinking on history and race and on how our society actually works, and you're removing that. You're narrowing what a person's allowed to view. If a person does not like how the school is teaching, if they believe that they've stepped over a line from helping a student learn critical thinking to instead propagandizing, I believe that the parent has every right to engage in freedom of speech to bring that concern. Now that's all changing. So where is our ability to engage in responsible critical thinking? No doubt none of us can recall a time when the world at large has faced so many problems and crises that impinge upon the well-being and mortality of hundreds of millions of people. For over a year and a half, we have been overwhelmed with anxiety, dread, depression, and anger, and desperately seeking solutions to ameliorate an all-pervading angst as society is completely being reconfigured in the image of those who hold power and influence and wealth. There was a time in the past when we believed our elected officials would enact laws to protect the citizenry and provide a climate for sustaining a normal, productive life. The COVID-19 pandemic and those who would capitalize on the opportunities it provides for non-democratic agendas has changed all of that. In its place, the masters of government and the industry have assured us that existential angst is our new fate. Faith in any institutional security has collapsed into a tragic theater as the younger generations face an uncertain future and life loses its purpose and meaning for many. The majority of people's beliefs are grounded and conditioned upon the input and information they receive, and today that information has been completely corporatized through a media that spoon-feed the consuming public a heavy dose of fear and confusion. Those who make efforts to pull back the curtain to expose the global Oz's wicked wizard are marginalized, officially canceled by Silicon Valley and an army of faux fact-checkers. Consequently, it should come as no surprise that the culture of non-transparency draping the halls of Washington, the international health institutions, professional medical associations, and the pharmaceutical complex would spark public suspicions about conspiratorial tensions to shred democracy and individual rights and freedoms. Objective skepticism, the ability to turn towards the mind's faculty for critical thought, has rapidly declined in American society for several decades. Yet, A healthy skepticism is necessary for questioning both the rhetoric and misinformation of official views and propaganda, including hints of what is commonly ridiculed as conspiracy. The word conspiracy has lost its meaning and credibility in the American lexicon. Rarely does mainstream media, professional associations and think tanks, and official public, federal relations and propaganda contextualize the term to simply indicate and implicate wrongdoing or corruption. When used by authorities, conspiracy is almost always pejorative, a means to slander, accuse, marginalize people as loons or quacks. As a result, we are led to believe the gospel word of officialdom. We believed the Warren Report, the 9/11 Commission, and more recently everything spouted from Anthony Fauci and the mouths of the White House and federal health agencies regarding the COVID pandemic and the wave of pro-vaccine mania bordering on the cult. Very often, conspiracies are righteously ridiculed, bordering on the absurd. However, let us not confuse real conspiracies that far in are outpaced from the faux ones. Past examples of political motivated black flag operations and secretive agendas created in corporate boardrooms and government halls cannot rule out that conspiracies don't exist or never have. When there is sound reason to question the integrity of a politician or health official or media pundit or corporate executive, it is natural for the inquisitive mind to explore more deeply the hidden motivations and goals underlying the thoughts and actions of conspiracy's physical footprints. In most cases, it is the evidence of contradictions, hypocrisies, and confirmed blatant lies by individuals in authority that give birth to the conspiratorial mind. Conspiracies conducted by the government, which resulted in unnecessary violence and death, are proven to have occurred, and others were being planned. Examples: the Gulf of Tonkin, that led to the entirety of the Vietnam conflict and all of the millions of people dead, including over 40,000 Americans and those suffering from long-term consequences, the Americans of Agent Orange, as well as the people in Vietnam by the millions, also of that deadly chemical legacy. Who took responsibility for that in the planning and operation, the promotion, the media? How about no one? The Tuskegee syphilis experiments, that was real. The CIA staged coup to oust Iranian Prime Minister Mohammad Mogadishu, that was real. And the failed Operation Northwood scheme by the CIA and Pentagon to launch acts of terror against Miami residents before the 2001 anthrax scare identified any individual or group behind the toxic letters. According to an FBI whistleblower, the Bush White House instructed the FBI to blame the attacks on Al-Qaeda. There was no proof of that, but they had to have someone to blame. And that's what happens always in all of these situations. In addition, the U.S. government frequently launches conspiratorial misinformation campaigns through the major corporate media and Silicon Valley complex in order to support its clandestine and long-term agendas. Before the 2001 anthrax scare identified any individual behind that, they already were on to this. Now, furthermore, we have found that the actual anthrax attacks were created by one or more U.S. government scientists associated with Fort Detrick. Furthermore, the mainstream media makes every effort to seduce us into believing that we don't have conspiracies in the banking system, pharmaceutical industry, and the government intelligence apparatus. National Security Association Director General Keith Alexander claimed publicly that intelligence surveillance of the American public, quote, foiled 54 terrorist attacks by extremists. Not true, all a lie. Independent research confirmed that in fact only one, I repeat, only one, not 54, terrorist attacks and a possible second attack could be directly associated with the war on terrorism. The rest were made up. The media never questioned the accuracy of Alexander's claim, nor provided evidence to the contrary. Repeatedly, Obama lied to the American people about the largesse of the national security state and its infiltration into the lives of average citizens, including massive data collection of private phone calls, emails, and internet activity. The federal government is a vast sea of conspiracies, operative at any moment. The National Security Agency's revelations of Edward Snowden documented with absolute proof that intelligence surveillance is far more extensive than officially reported. But others can be cited throughout the recent activities of the FBI, the CIA, the Pentagon, FISA courts, USDA, FDA, CDC, and the Justice Department, all engage regularly in conspiracies, real ones. Additionally, they have confirmed conspiracies planned by our executive branch, the CIA and military, and other federal agencies, including a U.S. congressional committee acknowledged that the COINTELPRO campaign included the FBI employing provocateurs from the 1950s to the 1970s to carry out terrorist acts in order to blame civil political activists. Bush's Justice Department Attorney General John Yeo recommended that the U.S. create a false terrorist organization for the purpose of conducting terrorist attacks that could be blamed on Al-Qaeda. Overwhelmingly scientific evidence now can debunk the official report that the three World Trade buildings could not have collapsed in freefall from the jets hitting them. Again, why has the media, not a single media, has challenged the report? Government has covered up conspiracies waged against Americans by other nations. The Israeli bombing of the USS Liberty and the planting of bombs in U.S. diplomatic facilities in Egypt by Israel terrorist cells are two examples. Any criticism of Israel? No. Any stopping the funds? No. Anything? Not at all. They're an ally. The State Department documents show the Pentagon's Joint Chief of Staff planned to bomb the U.S. consulate in the Dominican Republic in order to win popular support for an invasion of the country. And during the U.S. occupation of Afghanistan and Iraq, American soldiers were instructed to leave their weapons near bodies of innocent civilians they killed in order to make the claim that they were terrorists. The Tuskegee syphilis experiment conducted by the U.S. Public Health Service and the CDC between 1932 and 1972, which experimented with unknowing poor African-American men in violation of the Nuremberg Code. The 2000 Simpsonwood meeting convened by the CDC with all the major health agencies and executives of vaccine makers and the World Health Organization to cover up scientific evidence that mercury in vaccines were contributing to the increase in autism. The whistleblower document dump by a senior CDC epidemiologist, Dr. William Thompson, revealing that the health agency under Julie Gerberding's directorship destroyed internal research proving the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine contributed to a 250% higher rate of autism in African-American young boys, 36 months and younger. Gerberding went on to become president of Merck's vaccine division with a $2.5 million salary and $38 million in stock options. But when she knew that documents that showed a cover-up were being destroyed, isn't that obstruction of justice? Doesn't that counter the argument that you cannot sue a government employee? But that is not true if that employee is shown to have committed a crime. And what does it say on any level that if we are talking about systemic racism in different agencies, that the CDC has a long and dreaded history of systemic racism because these were African-American children, and it is estimated at least 200,000 minimally from the time of this cover-up till now, develop autism because they're still taking the MMR vaccine. Has there been a congressional hearing demanded by the Black Caucus? Nope. And there won't be. All you have to do is, if you're wondering why there is no investigation, look at how much money the pharmaceutical industry or any other lobbying group spends per legislator every year that legislator is now beholden, and that will tell you why you'll never have any of the major players in any industry ever really adversely affected. No matter what the dog and pony shows of these public hearings, they mean nothing because nothing changes ever from them. How about the 30-year asbestos cover-up of prior knowledge about asbestos association with respiratory illness and cancer in order to avoid lawsuits? The government was fully aware of that. The CIA's mind control operations, known as MKUltra, from the 1950s and the 1970s before being exposed by the Church Committee. How about the Iran-Contra affair in 1985 to secretly sell arms to Iran in order to fund the terrorist Nicaraguan Contras, who ironically were called freedom fighters, similar to our founding fathers? No, they were terrorists. The October surprise during the Carter-Reagan presidential election, when Reagan insiders met with Iranian revolutionary leaders in Europe to prevent the release of American hostages until after Reagan had won the election, from Jimmy Carter. Now, these are only examples indicating factions within the federal government with treason to conduct conspiratorial acts. When the brilliant journalist I.F. Stone wrote, quote, "Every government is run by liars, and nothing they say should be believed," end quote, he may have just as well been speaking about the entire gambit of federal agencies. Examples of legalized terror are plenty, and reveal actions solely for the purpose of profit at the cost of American health or freedoms. This has become partly epidemic in private industry. Look at the examples. Merck's withholding evidence from the FDA that its blockbuster drug Vioxx had serious health risks, including heart attacks and strokes and death. The drug was responsible for a minimum of 60,000 deaths, more likely 500,000. Nothing happened. In 2009, Pfizer was fined $2.3 billion for what was then the largest health care felony settlement in U.S. pharmaceutical history for illegally promoting its drugs, including its painkiller, Bextra. $1.2 billion was for the criminal fine, then the largest imposed in the United States. U.S. Justice Department charged Johnson & Johnson $2.2 billion in criminal fines for marketing its autism and antipsychotic drug, Risperidone, for unapproved uses. 45 states filed civil lawsuits against Johnson & Johnson in the scandal. This is the same Johnson & Johnson. This is the same Pfizer. These are the same people making the vaccines, but somehow we're not supposed to look back at their long and fetid history. Lawsuits continue to pile up against Merck for punitive damages, negligence, and strict liability, with failure to warn, manufacturing defects, and common law fraud due to injuries associated with the human papillomavirus vaccine Gardasil. A group of CDC scientists who call themselves SPIDER, standing for Scientists Preserving the Integrity, Diligence, and Ethics in Research, turned anonymous whistleblowers after releasing a written complaint criticizing the entire agency at the CDC for operating as a tax-funded subsidiary of the drug industry in partnership with the FDA. Any reports on that? None. Were they invited on 60 Minutes? Nope. The legal suits against the agricultural giant Monsanto hid years of research and evidence of its active Roundup chemical glyphosate being responsible for DNA damage, birth defects, and a variety of cancers. Federally funded researchers forcibly administered highly toxic AIDS drugs, an experiment on foster care children in a New York children's center. Now, besides withholding truthful claims, individuals, groups, companies, or government targeted in conspiracy theories share an atmosphere perceived as clandestine and secret. In the private sector, conspiracies are voluminous and are permitted to continue behind the backs of federal crime authorities. For decades, independent voices have suggested that Wall Street has undue influence over government economic policies in the nation. On the contrary, tens of thousands of articles, books, and opinion essays reinforced with solid scholarship reveal we do, in fact, have an epidemic of conspiracies in our midst. Yet there is barely a legislator or journalist in corporate media with the courage to independently investigate any of these trails and what's behind the current events. The major corporate media is also complicit in our nationwide conspiracy of corruption and criminal behavior. The media wonks of public opinion at the behest of federal and corporate pressure, control the issues that the public should or should not hear. Consequently, our media engages in campaigns of psychological terror against society at large by keeping the public in doubt and fear. Something is terribly wrong when there is such disparity between official rhetoric and the destruction of civil freedoms, justice, sovereignty, and constitutional guarantees now decimating human rights and the quality of life against the U.S. For example, recently, the Biden White House instructed the Justice Department on behalf of local school boards nationwide to consider any and all parents who challenge school board policies and rules. Instead, parents should be identified as and pursued as domestic terrorists, thereby stifling all free speech that challenges government policies. America's awash in this, and it's fettered. Every firm on Wall Street and in the large private industrial complexes, oil, fossil fuels, nuclear energy, military and national security contractors, the pharmaceutical industry, agrochemical firms, insurance firms, regularly and repeatedly engage in conspiracies against the American public. Private corporations and their employees have settled many thousands of lawsuits. On occasion, accused individuals, usually propped up by patsies and fall guys, have gone to jail, but rarely. But in the vast majority, probably 99% of all cases, companies negotiate settlements and walk away without remorse and are able to retain their full ill-gotten gains. J.P. Morgan settled for $13 billion for mortgage fraud, which left thousands of families homeless. Did they make good to those families? No. Wachovia was slapped with a mere $800 million for money laundering, hundreds of billions of dollars, including dark money associated with the illegal drug trade. Nothing happened. Pay a fine. Nobody goes to jail. In every private industry, we discover numerous resolved class action suits with underlying conspiratorial intentions to deceive the public and federal regulators. Corruption is systemic throughout corporate America and increases with every bill to further deregulate. A seductive characteristic of many reasonable conspiracy theories is that they cannot be ruled out entirely. This is why they become so popular. Research conducted by psychologists Michael Wood and Karen Douglas at the University of Kent in the United Kingdom and findings by political scientist Lance DeHaven in his book Conspiracy Theory in America indicate that conspiracy theories are more sane and intellectually mature than our naive leaders in government and the major two political parties who more fanatically attach themselves to anti-conspiracy beliefs. For example, the Kent studies show that two of three viewers of mainstream media reported on the events of 9/11 disbelieve the networks. Now, with full-throttle efforts to impose anti-scientific policies to lessen COVID pandemic, entering a dystopian territory, a flurry of conspiratorial charges are being leveled against the vaccine makers, Anthony Fauci, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, the CDC, the Biden administration. Since conspiracies arise due to observable inconsistencies and contradictions and obvious misstatements, there is every reason for a critical thinking person to realize that the official narrative is often contrary to the growing number of first-person accounts of deception at every level. Numerous medical professionals and physicians have now spoken out against the accuracy of the PCR testing to track the pandemic and determine case counts, the manner in which COVID-19 deaths were recorded, which included deaths caused by many other medical conditions, including pneumonia and cancers, but an infectious disease but called COVID. The unwarranted changes in the World Health Organization's definition of a pandemic and herd immunity, the violation of international laws by enforcing an experimental vaccine on the public, the suppression of accurate data and reports of COVID vaccine injuries and deaths, the suppression of effective and inexpensive life-saving drugs such as ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, and the vitamins, years of scientific evidence against the effectiveness of masks and social distancing and lockdown. In conclusion, the widespread censorship of scientific voices within the orthodox medical community is only the tip of the iceberg, however. It provides certainty that the policies and strategies being endorsed are by no means science-based. Similar to the worst kinds of religious fundamentalism, that represses and engages in violence against non-believers, the commercial-based medicine advocated by Fauci and the federal agencies and the government's network of medical institutions and drug companies and philanthropic groups like Bill Gates' foundation are determined to kick out of the scientific community and excommunicate those, any and all, who criticize their dogma and agenda. In every worst possible way, the medical establishment is emulating religious institutions that have been totally intolerant of dissent. We can and should have enormous respect for science when conducted in an objective, methodological manner, aligned with ethical intent, but we should show no respect whatsoever for science that is dogmatic, fundamentalistic, and intolerant. The official propaganda about COVID-19, the SARS-2 virus, the vaccines, the demonization of safe, cheap, and effective treatments is no friend to real science, any more than religious militants are the authentic ethical-based religion. The federal medical complex's handling of the crisis has been an utter failure from the start, and now we are witnessing the larger cost of this incompetence, appearing in unexpected harm such as enormous spikes in mental health disorders, suicides, and violence. The latest example with disastrous consequence is the recent discovery of the COVID vaccine are being incorrectly administered. Medical personnel administering the vaccine in clinics and pharmacies across the nation are failing to first aspirate the syringe to assure that no vein was punctured, which could cause a potentially lethal injury to the heart. This gross negligence is now being observed in people afflicted with blood clotting, myocardia, and other heart problems following vaccination. However, the more disconcerting problem is that the CDC and the World Health Organization are giving false information by stating that aspiration is unnecessary. They are wrong, deadly wrong. Again, our health officials are completely on the wrong side, and millions of vaccine doses have been administered, which means that those vaccines could have gone into a vein instead of the muscle. If you aspirate and didn't get back blood, it's the muscle. If you aspirate and get back blood, that means you're in a vein. Don't push the vaccine in. Not a single one was done correctly. We can only imagine how many injuries and deaths were caused by this gross medical negligence. Fortunately, the pandemic is being exposed as the scam more quickly every day as federal inconsistencies and new information further implodes their narrative. The public will then need to rise up along with the dissenting medical community and demand legal accountability for the perpetrators of this pandemic terrorism. And that is the pushback to what was stated by Tucker Carlson. You may think it's completely separate. It is not. Telling all parents, no matter how legitimate their concerns and questions or statements may be, if you say it, we will then have the FBI and the Justice Department investigate you with the potential of you becoming a domestic terrorist. That's where we're at. I told you it was going to get worse, and it's going to get a lot worse than that. Your comments, talk back next, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And also, we are going to play a clip from Jimmy Dore showing you what he came across last night. It's a big deal, and it should give concern to everyone. Please stay with us. While you're thinking about what you'd like to share and call in and state your opinion, I want to give you a very unusual special. Just got it. And boy, it can help a lot of people. First of all, you're going to save 60% off full retail value. It's only $90. Normally, go for $221.97. What is it? It's one of the most important products I've ever created because it really, really works quickly. Fiber stuff. Now, a lot of people don't realize that they're not getting all the fibers necessary, in my opinion, to really help them. So I put together the best of the best. The super fibers. Apple fiber, oat fiber, flaxseed meal, psyllium husk, the carrots, cinnamon, rice bran, ginger, cranberry, fiber, fennel, orange juice, pineapple juice, lemon juice, lime juice, cherries, watermelon, pear juice, mangoes, strawberry juice, papaya, anise with some stevia. It tastes great and it really works. And all health, in my opinion, begins in the intestine. So let's get our intestine together. Let's do something good for the intestine. All right? And this does it. Does it? And also giving you 17 grams of fiber in a serving. That's one thing. But then a superstar of superstars, this is the super antioxidant. Vegan capsules, 90 of them. This is where you get your vitamin A and D. Yeah, you got a lot of vitamin D here, by the way. You're getting your vitamin C and vitamin E, B6 and magnesium, and zinc, and selenium, copper, and citrus bioflavonoids in Chinese green tea, 200 milligrams, by the way. And L-carnosine, grape skin extract, 150 milligrams. That's a great amount. L-cysteine, alpha-lipoic acid, taurine, astaxanthin, bilberry extract, broccoli stem cell, cabbage leaf, carrot root, licorice root, lutein, lycopene, milk thistle, N-acetylcysteine, quercetin, rutin, superoxide dismutase, tocotrienols, coenzyme Q10, L-glutathione reduced, bromelain, raspberry leaf powder, rosemary leaf powder, pine bark extract. This is the most comprehensive, all-inclusive super antioxidants you could possibly put in your body that I know of. So this is it. You're getting the best of the best, and you need this. The antioxidants are so important. And finally, something that I don't remember ever offering, because we've got this brand new package. I put together the country's leading authorities on overcoming depression and anxiety. Four documentaries. Four in a package. Dr. Richard Brown, Dr. Patricia Gerbark, Dr. Emmett Miller, Dr. Lee Lipsenthal, Dr. Walter Malsh. These are all medical doctors. Dr. Beth McDougall, Dr. Henry Grayson, Dr. Brenda Shoshona, Dr. Ruben Naaman, Dr. David Steinberg, Dr. Gerald Hansen, Dr. Peter Bongiamo, Dr. Benjamin Asher, Dr. Madeline Lewis. These are all people telling you the best natural and non-toxic approaches to dealing with one of the biggest problems we have today, either anxiety or depression, panic attacks, etc., how to deal with them without the medication. Okay? Four documentaries in that single set. These are DVDs, not CDs. You watch them. So that's the package. Okay? Here's what you do. You got a 60% savings. All this stuff can really help you. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065 to get it. Or call Neil in the Vitamin Closet at 646-926-5430. 646-926-5430. Okay, that's a great package. Now let's see who we have online to, let's say hello to, who do we have here? Mitchell from New York City, your turn.
Hi, Gary. How are you? Well, I love your documentaries, of course. And, you know, I'm glad that you're further promoting them. About the subject you were discussing, about the people who are speaking up, parents, and being labeled as domestic terrorists, isn't this simply illegal and unconstitutional to make such claims as that? Isn't there a legal basis to challenge this on a local, if not a federal level?
No, not at this time, because the Supreme Court has been in alignment with the Patriot Act and the National Defense Authorization Act, and this is why they're associating it with the Patriot Act, because the Patriot Act in and of itself, a nefarious, terrible bill when it passed, and all those legislators passed it. It was almost passed unanimously. So understand is how they bring it in. Now, will someone one day try to bring this up to the Supreme Court or another court? Very probably. in which case then we'll see what happens. Right now, I'm not confident that you could win in a court of law on this. The only thing I can see happening that would make a difference is the public protested. But if the public goes the way it's been going, with under 0.1% of the American public protesting anything, then I suggest those of you who care about your freedom and care about quality schools, better to move to a place that has a quality school than to get arrested and have the FBI give you a domestic terrorist label that sticks with you forever. So I say move to South Dakota, move to Texas, move to Florida. Those are the states that have the political will to allow you the freedom of choice, whatever that choice may be. At least your body is considered sovereign. Your home is sovereign. There's a homestead law in all those states, which means that if you were sued and someone got a lien against you, they can't exercise that lien on a homestead. That's why people move to those states. There's a lot of other reasons, too. Quality of life. In Florida, of course, the weather is constantly beautiful. Lots of nice people. I mean, just everywhere you go, the people are nice. It's a different energy. So find the place that you believe you would like to move, because if you're going to fight your school boards, there's going to be massive arrests. The media will show that you are now a terrorist. These are the real terrorists, not the head choppers and that we don't care about coming across our border now that they have no restraints. No, you as a parent concerned about what your child is taught, you're the terrorist. That's where we're at this moment, and it's going to get a lot worse. You cannot change these. Look at New York. Look, I told you the bill that they want to be able to take people who may be infected, but even people they've been in contact with who are not infected, and lock them all up for 60 days. Where are you going to be locked up? Will you have any rights at all? The state determines this is an emergency act to preserve the health of the state, and yet it's the vaccinated who are now showing the problems and super spreading and most susceptible to disease, and the actual studies show that. I'm going to save Jimmy Dore's clip for tomorrow. We're out of time. Mitchell, thank you for calling in. I appreciate it.
Good to hear your voice, and good to see you recently at the retreat.
Okay. By the way, the retreat was spectacular. The guests themselves in the anti-aging study were just phenomenal. But you can't put something like that on with all the moving parts that it requires, with all the workshops all day long, from deep meditations to Tai Chi to drumming to yoga to power walking, water aerobics, artist healing, gourmet cooking classes, and great food. If you don't have a great staff, when I think of all the people, and we're out of time now, I'll mention them tomorrow, who came together from all across the United States to help support that, that's how it was a success. It was the staff harmonizing with the guests. And tomorrow I'll play a few of the clips of the people as they were exiting, giving their interpretations of what they experienced. I think you'll find it unique. Have a nice day, everyone.